I'm Graham, I'm an addict. So I've just had the second worst bit of news today. The first bit was not walking in and seeing there was a podium. The second bit is he's just told me that I've only got 20, 25 minutes. And once I get going and once I start talking about this program of recovery that's given me everything back in my life that I ever wanted, that I didn't know that I wanted, it's like, you ain't going to stop me. There's so much that I've learned. There's so much I've experienced in this program. The crazy thing is I'm sitting at the back and I listen to Matt and I listen to Robert and they delivered an unbelievable chair. They were knowledgeable, articulate, experienced and funny. And I'm thinking, I don't want to run away and go home. In fact, I even thought at one point I was going to go into town, see if I could get a suit and a tie, and like, hopefully you call me a wanker. Okay. I'll never really know what I'm going to say, and the beauty of it is it took me 2 or 3 quarter hours to get up here, and I've never done a chair on the way up here, because ultimately, anything that I think is important and anything that I think you need to hear isn't. It's what comes through me. It's what actually comes from my heart. It's what actually is authentic about me. I've got to let go of my desire for me to want you to love me and think I'm funny and think that I'm the one who's getting you clean and sober and think that all of my experience in recovery is what's the most important thing here today, and it ain't. What is important is actually I stand here today and I deliver a message of depth and weight as Robert so eloquently put. This is one of those moments where I could almost go into complete silence because my brain goes like completely blank. And as painful and as uncomfortable as that might be for you, you try standing up here and that happened. I came into recovery at the age of 47. And I came in with a set of beliefs, ideas and convictions about myself, right, that no one could convince me otherwise. I came in believing, and I remember my second ever meeting I went to in Upshire in Essex. I remember Jeannie was the secretary back then. It was an unbelievable meeting, small church hall, 60 people, standing room only. It was the one of the best days of my life. But I remember sharing back to Jeannie, I'm a dog of a man. I'm a dog of a man, and I was in tears. And I was heartbroken because I couldn't look myself in the mirror. How could I not have all those beliefs and convictions about myself when all my own evidence lay stretched out around me? You know, I had a lovely wife and 3 beautiful daughters, and I had a home. And I could not stop hurting them. You know, I hurt them for years before even my addiction. My drug taking came at a point in my life when I was at my lowest ebb. You know, I'd created throughout my whole life, you know, this program for happiness, you know, completely unconscious, you know, based on all of my desires and instincts and everything I need. I spent my whole life, not just my addiction years, right, wanting more coke, wanting more drink. I spent my whole life wanting more. More love. More affection. More approval. More recognition. I spent my whole life feeling invisible until I got to a point in my life when actually I went, fuck this. Right. And I went out and I created my own program for happiness based on my ego. And Robert talked about it. I'll show you. I'll show you. I'll be seen. You'll know me. And I went out and I created that base. And do you know what? I had some really good years way before addiction. Way, way, way before addiction. But as I said, I spent my whole life with this attitude, I must do better. Right? I didn't have any conception or understanding of the idea. What the concept of love is, right? It's like, if I love you, I love you. You don't need to do anything more for my love. Because I love you. All of my friends going back back in the day, you know, hairy ass men of the world, right? That I love to pieces, right? Because they're my mates. I don't need a reason to love them. Why do they need a reason to love me? But I've spent my whole life, right? My insides feeling like an emotional sieve. It didn't matter how much love, how much recognition, how much approval or praise you poured into me, there was nothing inside me to hold it in. So I spent my whole life just trying to do more. You will love me if I do this. You know, and creating through those expectations all the time. You know, I was literally like an excited little kid, you know, running around wanting to do things for people my whole life. If I do this, you'll love me. If I do this, you'll recognize me. If I do this, you'll want me in your company. You know, until that fateful day, you know, I lost my business, right? In 2006, I spent 18 years trying to build that business up just to get recognition out of my dad. And when that business fell apart, not through drink and drugs, but it's a long story. Part of my soul was ripped out of me. You know, I was the failure that I was frightened of being. You know, you were right to think that about me because I am worthless. And then the fateful day came when someone presented me with a CD case and some lines of coke in the back of a limo. And I took that line of coke, right? And do you know what went through my head in that moment? The kid is back. The kid is back. I'll show you. You know, like it talks in a big book, you know, like, you know, that fateful day in 1929 or whatever it is. I can't remember the details. You know, like brokers of iFinance were jumping off of buildings to their death. It sickened Bill, you know, and as that drink raised to his lips, that grim determination to succeed. That's what happened with me. I'll show him. The kid is back. Little did I know that was just going to turn in flight and cut me to ribbons and everyone I loved around me. And everything I despised myself for, I became worse. And I hurt those people around me to the point where I couldn't even look in the mirror anymore. You know, my little girls, the way that I used to talk to them. You know, I remember reading in the big book with my sponsor going through it. He said, you know, I stole from my wife's slender purse when the morning madness was upon me. And I cried my eyes out because I'd done that. You know, she was working two jobs, you know, and I was out of work and I'd lost my business and I was using every day and I was thieving and I was doing everything I didn't want to ever do. I stole from everyone around me, my business partner, my parents, my friends. And I got to a point, God came into my life on the 2nd of February 2010. And I know this for a fact. I absolutely know this with all my heart that God came into my life because I looked at my wife back then at that point. And for all the fear that I had, that she was going to find out about my using and leave me, I thought, I'm killing you and I'm killing our girls. And at that point, without any knowledge of the big book or any of the processes and everything that we talk about, right, I admitted to God, to myself and another human being that I was an addict. And she just said to me, no more promises, Gray, just take action. And the very next day, I rung up a friend of mine I used to use with. I worked with him for years. He was always holding. I used with him until, you know, Dave, you holding? Yeah. Sweet. Right. I used with him so many times. He come into work this morning, right? We was in sales, suited and booted, like Robert, right? Really wish I'd worn a suit today. I went, Dave, you holding? He went, no, mate, I'm clean. Didn't even know, like, clean. What do you mean? Like, you know, I was so green and, like, you know, I ain't a fucking addict, for God's sake. I'm a middle-aged man that's got a wife and a family. And he went, yeah, I'm clean. Yeah, right, yeah, but you holding? And he went, no. He said, I'm going to meetings. He went, I've got a sponsor and, like, going through the big book. I went, right. Sorry, you holding? And he went, Fucking hell. And he opened up his briefcase. And he got that big book, all shiny, with a wrap around it and everything. He went, yeah, he's taking me through the 12 steps. I said, what's that? He went, fuck nuts. Nine months later, I'm ringing David on Wednesday, the 3rd of February, 2010. And he went, great, you've made my day. He took me to my first meeting in Watford. I turned up. Thought, fucking hell, what the fuck has happened here? The geezer that was the secretary was about 6'8", only had one leg. He was the angriest fucking man in the world with no teeth. Right fucking place. People started talking and I just sat there and I went, I ain't gotta lie no more. The relief of not having to lie. And I remember the chair. I don't want to go on. I'm conscious of the time that I've got. And I went to my second meeting. That was on the Friday. I went to my second meeting on the Monday in Upshire. And a week later, I met my sponsor. And he took me through the steps. That next weekend, we'd done it over the whole weekend. Saturday and Sunday, gave up his whole weekend for me, bless him. And he said to me, Gray, trust me. He didn't say, trust God. He said, trust me. Do what I did. Carry on doing what I do, and you'll never have to drink or use again. And I thought, I'll have that. With all the desperation of a drowning man, I'll have that. And so we did. And we went through the big book. And I've learned so much. And I could stand here all day, now that I've got rid of nervousness, I could stand here all day and talk to you about this unbelievable, wonderful, miraculous program that gives us our lives back if we are willing to take the action. You know, he said to me, great, selfishness, self-centeredness, that's the root of our troubles, right? I've stood in meetings hundreds and hundreds of times listening to people go, I'm selfish and self-centered to the core. Well, I ain't. I'm not. But you know what? I don't believe for one minute that any of you are either, right? Selfishness, self-centeredness, that is the root of my problem. But it tells me in that book that deep down inside every man, woman, child is a fundamental understanding of God. And if that don't make any sense to you at this stage, and I didn't understand it, and my understanding of God has changed so many times in 12 years. But deep down inside, every man, woman and child is that fundamental understanding of God. And if God don't make sense here, then change the word to love. Because deep down inside me, I have always had a love and a caring attitude towards other people. It's just been blocked out and it's just been covered up by the pain and my desire for more to fix me. I'll feel better if you fix me. It ain't about drink or drugs for me. I don't need a drink or a drug to be frightened. You know, I don't need a drink or a drug to act out. You know, I remember reading in that big book, it said, despite good intentions, we found ourselves to be in collision with people or things. I remember reading it for the first time. I've got my pencil and I'm like in my big book now, it's all faded. And I've got, this is me, exclamation mark. I said, I never got up in the morning and thought, I'm going to fuck some people up today. I never did. You know, but somehow I found myself in collision with people. If only everyone would just do what I need them to do, then everything will be all right. Everything will be all right. And that's applicable, you know, it's not applicable today, you know. Do you know what I've learned through this program of, I came into recovery at the age of 47. I'd had 47 years of influence of my peers, friends from school, my parents, my teachers, everyone I worked with down the meat market, all influencing my ideas, beliefs and decisions about how I should act, right? I ain't going to change that in a weekend in Ongar overnight just going through the steps. Right, when we get to step 10, listen, when Bill wrote that big book, a very articulate and intelligent man, you can tell by the when you read it, there's hardly any sentences or paragraphs or pages where he uses the same descriptive words twice. Yet when we get to step 10, in that small paragraph, it says, continue four times. He's really making a point that we need to continue this. We need to continue looking for resentment. And I'll tell you why. Because if you understand what the word resentment is, all right, and this isn't to be, I don't know, whatever the word is, right? Clever, right? I looked it up. I didn't know half of these words. I looked them up. I've educated myself so many times with so much. Okay, resentment comes from the Latin, sentire, to feel. We are sentient beings. You know, mammals, we have that. You know, that gift to have feelings and emotions. You prefix that with re, it means again. Every little corner, every little resentment, every little anger, every little I didn't get what I want from so right. I refill again and again and again. And I add to it and I add to the pain and then I'm dead. I mean, don't they know who I think I am? You know, I had to be rid of this resentment. I had to, or it kills us. And the process of the steps, the action that we take, is how we go through that process of changing our thinking. I couldn't change my thinking by thinking. It's how I've got here. I can only change my thinking by the actions. And when you think about it, you know, the practical side and the psychological side of this program, right, is unquestionable. If I've spent all my life up to this point acting in a certain way, right, and expecting a different outcome, well, that's complete insanity. But that's what I always done. So I came in and I was surrounded by you and I was willing to be surrounded by you because I walked into a meeting for the first time and hopelessness and despair was changed, but was converted into hope that I can change from a hopeless addict into someone that can actually contribute something into society. And the greatest reward is what I get back from it. So that action that I take, you know, it's like I have this analogy. Now, I don't know whether I heard this analogy, whether I made it up or whatever it is, but I'm going to take ownership and say I made it up years ago, right? And if you've heard it anywhere else, then don't come and tell me, all right? I like to live in my delusions, okay? Come into recovery and get yourself around the people that are doing it, that are inspired, that are on fire, right? It tells us in the big book, we think there's an easier, softer way, but there's not, right? You know, I can put all of this off. You know, Robert put it perfectly. Procrastination, easy for you to say, right? Okay? I can put it off and put it off and put it off, and right, it ain't going nowhere till I confront it. Okay? So I have to face these things. And in facing them, I actually, you know, there's a beautiful quote, right? It says, fear and doubt knocked on the door, faith and courage answered. There was no one there. Every time. Every time. So we come into recovery and the analogy is this, okay? I nearly forgot it. The analogy is this, all right? You take a fire, a log fire, a campfire with some logs in it burning away brightly. You take another log and you place that next to the fire. And after a few minutes, it starts to get warm. And you leave it there a little bit longer and it starts to blister. And all of a sudden, you see some sparks catch a light. And you leave it there even longer and longer and it will burst into flame. Okay? Do that with your recovery. Get next to the fire and allow yourself to burst into flame. Be of service. I've been of service throughout my whole program of recovery. Can I relate back to that feeling of more? Yeah, of course I can. But if I do more service, and if I get involved at district, and if I go to London district, if I set up Essex district, and if I do this, well, everyone will know Graham. The difference is it's not unconscious. I'm not unconsciously desiring more and more. I'm learning from this, and I can see resentments coming from my expectations, and I can write about them. I want to go on and on and on. There's so many things that have happened in my life. Do you know what? God has taken away from me everything I thought I needed and wanted. Okay. And nearly every single one of them had my claw marks all over it. Right. You know, don't hold on too tightly to anything. You know. I came into recovery. I'd been married for a long time. I suffered from, you know, codependency issues and low self-worth, and, you know, even in recovery, I wrote years worth of inventory, misdirected inventory, thinking I was writing the right thing, missing the point, losing the target resentment, you know, wondering why these things are coming up again and again, right? And not getting down to the root cause. And the root cause was this: fear. Okay, so coming up to 10 years in recovery, my ex-wife of 29 years left me, and I was devastated, and I didn't think I could go on. And you guys and those people close to me and around me said to me, Gray, you need to work your program, like you've worked your program right at the beginning, right? Because it is the difference between life and death. And it is the difference between pain and freedom. And I did that. And I spent that first 9 months on my own for the first time in 29 years without the hub of my family around me, which I held dear. And I wake up in the morning and I think, I can't do this. I can't do this. In that summer, I sponsored four guys. They saved my life. I got out of self by helping them. And not all of them are clean today, only one. But I stayed clean and sober. And I gave of myself, even in my darkest moments. You know, the message that I give here today, and the message that Robert and Matt and the other guys I didn't hear today, is this. Wife or no wife, job or no job, home or no home, right? If you build on your relationship with your higher power that we choose to call God, you can recover. I need nothing else in my life. It tells me in that big book, for us, material well-being always, always followed spiritual progress. It don't mean I'm going to get a new Range Rover Evoque or a lovely big house or anything else, but what it's actually going to do is it's going to allow me to have the right perspective and to be able to be grateful for everything I've already got today. Whether I think that's good or bad or not, okay, God knows it's good for me. And I didn't know this was going to happen. On February the 15th last year, I got a phone call from a friend of mine in recovery, 14 years clean and sober. And he said to me, Gray, there's been something on my mind for quite a while. He said, I've been taking it into my prayer and meditation. It's a bit left field, Gray, but I can't let it go. He said, I need to talk to you about it. I went, yeah, well, go on then, John. What is it? He went, I want to introduce you to my sister-in-law. I went, really? It's a bit left field, isn't it? He went, yeah. I went, I don't know, John. He went, she's really lovely. She's a really wonderful lady. And I think you two get on so well. And I went, yeah, go for it, John. Yeah. He went, well, I ain't asked her. Yeah, well, fucking ask her. So we met and we spoke and we got so much in common. It's been a long and winding road finding my way to her door. But she's here with me today. And I'm so grateful for that. You know, everything I thought I wanted in life, God knew better. You know, he took away the things that I owned to because of my fear. Because he knew that I didn't have the ability to step out into that. And every time I step out into my fear, I find I have the courage. Having courage isn't any kind of removal of fear. It's just having courage in the face of that fear. You know, my life as it is today, it's the best it's ever been. I'm in a loving relationship with someone I think the world of. And yet I still feel free in that relationship because I'm giving of myself. Because I want to be in that relationship. I care about that person. Every single time God comes up where I come up short. I came into recovery thinking this, that I was a wrong one and I was a dog of a man. And that I was unable to change the way that I felt about myself. I'm able to look in the mirror and actually go, do you know what, Gray, you're all right. That'll do. That's okay. And for all those things that were painful, it says in the family afterwards, cling to the thought that in God's hands, the dark past is the greatest possession you have, the key to life and happiness for others. With it, you can avert death and misery for them. I'll leave it there. Thank you.